emergency funds. I'm ambivalent about them. On the one hand, it's good to have a cash cushion in case you, you know, lose your job or something. On the other hand, if you've got a credit card and you've got debt there, you're probably better off eliminating it than saving for an emergency fund. There's lots of circumstances when it makes tons of sense and some when it doesn't make tons of sense, in my opinion. Here to challenge my thinking on the who, what, when, where, and how much of emergency funds is John DeGooey. He's a certified financial planner and portfolio manager at Industrial Alliance Securities. Hi, John.
Hi, Bruce.
How would you characterize your view of emergency funds?
I would also call it ambivalent, but I would also say that it's circumstantial. So a lot of it depends on your income, your cash flow, your tolerance for risk, and that sort of thing as well.
How do you define an emergency? Because one of the things that I think people overdo is apply that word to things that are completely predictable, forecastable, and savable.
I completely agree, and that's what a lot of people do. Is they say this was really a bit of a waste, and it's because they used it inappropriately. So I think that's exactly the test. It's got to be something that you did not see coming. If you have a car that needs to be repaired before the summer or needs to be winterized before the snow flies, and you knew that and you've known it all along, that's not an emergency. That's just something that you should have budgeted for. If, on the other hand, someone rolls through a stop sign and puts a ding in your fender that you did not see coming, and that is an emergency. So it's basically, if you saw it coming, it's not an emergency.
What is your rule of thumb on how much people should, in theory, save in an emergency fund? And we can talk about what, you know, some of the variables are that would increase or decrease that number.
So in many instances, the number is zero. There shouldn't be one. But for those who have an emergency fund, I would say something like 1 to 2 months worth of saving of income is about all you really need. The rule of thumb that many financial planners use is 3%, and I think that's a bit much.
3% of annual income?
So I'm sorry. 3 months of annual income.
Right.
And but what I would say is that's really, really high. I think 1 or 2 months for most people. If you've got an emergency that takes more than 1 or 2 months worth of income to resolve, then you've got other fish to fry.
What are some of the circumstances in which an emergency fund doesn't really make sense? It's not really required.
You mentioned this off the top of the show. If you have other obvious debts that are attracting a high interest rate, and a credit card debt would be the most obvious example of that, I would not have an emergency fund at all. I think the biggest emergency is paying off high interest, non-deductible debt.
There are other ways to pay for emergency expenses, and obviously not great to slap that car repair on a credit card. But
right.
If you've got something like a fully secured line of credit, that may be a way to ease things.
Yeah, and in fact, that would actually be the way that I would keep score. Let's divide the market into, say, three segments: the low-income earner, the mid-earner, and the high-earner. The low-earner probably doesn't have enough money for an emergency fund because he or she is just paying the bills month to month. The high-earner probably has some equity in a home and can have a fully secured line of credit and would be better off using that line of credit in an emergency whenever it's needed and leaving it in your hip pocket and not using it either way if it's not needed. The people in the middle are the ones that probably need an emergency fund. And I'm going to define the middle as being people who are earning, say, $40,000 to $70,000 as an individual or $50,000 to $100,000 a year as a couple. That's sort of what I would call the mid-market. And those are people who oftentimes are doing better than the really low earners, but they're also not doing as well as some people who have a home. Many of these people in the mid-market won't be homeowners. Depends on where you live in the country and that mm-hmm. sort of thing as well. But as a general rule, it's the people in the mid-market that kind of a cushion, because people in the low end have to just pay the bills and have to minimize those high interest expenses. And the people in the high end have the benefit of usually having some equity elsewhere that they can tap into if needed, and that they simply let it ride if they don't need it.
One of the other factors is income stability. So if you've got, you know, you and your spouse are both freelancers and there's huge volatility, that might be a real reason to have an emergency fund. But if you and or your spouse have a job where the income's stable and you've got a little bit of cash flow wiggle room, then you need less of an emergency fund saved up. Would that be a fair characterization?
That would be fair, but of course it would depend on the emergency. If the emergency is losing your job, then no matter how secure it is, if you lose it, you get a pink slip, then there's a problem there. But back to the story of the car crash, presumably if there's car work that needs to be done, what we haven't discussed is, well, we said, well, what constitutes an emergency? But of course the other problem is, well, some emergencies are bigger than others. I mean, if you've got a tree that falls on the roof of your house and your house is leaking, it needs to be repaired rather urgently. And it's like the old ad says, it costs what it costs. You've got to get it fixed, and that's the priority. Obviously, the more income you have, the more wherewithal you have to withstand it. And you can always, I suppose, in a pinch, get a personal loan, and you can secure it, for instance, against your earning power. So you can just go to someone, and if it's only $10,000 or $15,000 between you and your spouse, even if you don't have equity in a home, you might be able to get a loan that can be at a much more reasonable interest rate than, say, a credit card to pay.
I'm relieved you said 1 to 2 months is sort of your starting point, because oftentimes people say it's like 3, and I've even seen 6 months of after-tax earning. And my concern with that is always that we're setting people up for failure. They just feel like, well, I can't do that, so there's no point in even trying.
Yeah, and the other thing that I would say is, if you have, say, money in a TFSA, you can always tap into it. Now, obviously, if money is in a TFSA and it's invested in equities and stocks, there's always a chance that it might go down temporarily right when the emergency hits. but just to be clear, the emergency is not the stock market dropping. Like, that's not an emergency. That's not emergencies are life events where you actually have to pay for something that you didn't foresee coming along. And but one of the benefits of having money in a TFSA is that you can tap into it at any time at no cost. You take the money out and you can use that. That TFSA can function as an emergency fund as well, which is one more reason why you don't need a traditional conventional emergency fund, because especially if you have, say, some conservative assets and some aggressive assets in your TFSA, even if the stock market takes a tumble, you'll have some,
a bond ETF or maybe even just cash. Maybe even just cash.
That you can tap into then that way as well.
So TFSA container number one. What would be container number two for?
I would not use an RSP. RSPs, as your listeners would likely know, any money that you take out of an RSP is taxable in your hands when you take it out. It adds to your taxable income. And if the emergency is a loss of a job, it's not so bad because you don't have the income. But if the emergency is a tree falling on your house, you're still working, and that's a problem. Plus, you lose the contribution room forever, so I wouldn't do that. If you are one of those people, and again, this is probably the top tier, the people that are high earners who actually have an investment account above and beyond their RSP and or TFSA, you can always tap into that as well. And you might even be able to trigger some capital losses if things are going wrong. You can even turn it into a benefit. But most people won't have that. And it's great to say that you could do that if you wanted to. But I think realistically, most of your listeners won't really have that option.
What about a regular high interest savings account, maybe even at another institution, so there's a lower risk that you're going to touch it?
Sure. Now we're getting into the psychology and compartmentalization of, you have different assets, and this is sort of one of the best ways to ensure you won't touch it, is to say, this is my emergency fund. I've put that money into institution B, and all of the rest of my retirement savings are at institution A. If that floats your boat, then whatever it takes. We're trying to get people to engage in behavior that leads to positive outcomes.
Yeah.
And if you have to do that in order to get a positive outcome, that's unfortunate. But, if that's the only way that you can do it, then it's better than nothing.
How do you ensure people restock it? So there is an emergency. They deplete it.
Yeah.
Needs to be rebuilt.
Yeah. And I think hopefully if it really is an emergency, it's not the sort of thing that recurs. It's the sort of thing that comes, once in a blue moon, and you can restock it slowly. But I would think that, you should try to have it rebuilt within 1 to 2 years, and hopefully at that time. So you just sort of figure out however much you want. And let's say if it's 2 years and it's $10,000, that's $5,000 a year. That's a little over $400 a month. And you should start basically setting up a sinking fund, and $425 every month comes out of your pay and into the emergency fund.
I have an OOPS fund. Have you ever heard of an OOPS fund?
I have not.
It is not for emergencies. It's for when I've been stupid. And the reason I have this is so I can forgive myself quickly because I've been towed or I've just done something just ridiculous. And then I just don't feel badly about it because I say, you know what, $1,000 a year, I'm going to do something stupid. So this is my ability to do that without feeling guilty. Pretty good, eh?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. It's I presume that's fast women and slow horses.
Yeah, neither of those things. Neither of those things. But, you know, people can learn from my stupidity, hopefully. John, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bruce.
John DeGoey, certified financial planner, portfolio manager at Industrial Alliance Securities.